Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the On Track podcast. Today is an extra special edition in which I will be joined with my colleague, Ben Jordan, and we are launching a new ongoing series that we'll be doing together called Ask Me Anything, where Ben and I will join together. Ben will answer your questions about engineering design. I will answer your questions about manufacturing and supply chain. And we'll do this about once a month. And so you can submit your questions on the All Team Live forum, which is free, and go to the lounge and submit your questions there. We've also set up a custom email just for you, which is ontrack@altium.com. And today, Ben and I are going to take one of those questions from the forum, in which an engineer asked, if there's just one or two EEs, do we really need data management, or is that overkill? So enjoy this conversation with Ben Jordan and I, and we'll see you on the other side. Welcome to Altium's On Track podcast, where we talk to leaders about PCB design, tackling subjects ranging from schematic capture all the way to the manufacturing floor. I'm your host, Judy Warner. Please listen in every week and subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, and all your favorite podcast apps. And be sure to check out the show notes at altium.com/podcast, where you can find great resources and multiple ways to connect with us on social media. Well, today is a really special day for me. I'm so glad to once again have my colleague and friend Ben Jordan in with me. And we just had an impromptu meeting and decided to shake up this podcast a little bit. So we've decided to have Ben and myself get together maybe once a month and do an Ask Me Anything. So Ben's really an expert in the engineering and design side. And of course, I come from the manufacturing and supply chain side. So we thought, hey, you know, you guys can ask us anything. So we can do that through the forum, which is you give them the information on the forum.
Yeah, actually, it's kind of what partly inspired this. As many Altium customers would know, there's a user forum that's pretty vibrant. There's a lot of regular contributors there, and a lot of people in the community help each other out with technical questions. But there's one area in the forum that's always fascinated me, and it's called the lounge.
The lounge.
And it's like we're kind of an extension of the lounge right now.
Yes, we're lounging.
The point of the lounge is it's the place for all the other topics that are interesting to people who do PCB design and electronics engineering, but maybe aren't related to Altium products necessarily, or, you know, just might be a little more controversial in nature, or a place where people can feel free to express their own truthful, honest opinions and share their knowledge and help each other out without getting bogged down into the weeds of the actual, you know, where to click in the design tools necessarily. Right. And so a lot of fascinating conversations tend to crop up there.
They do. And in addition to that, we've decided to set up an email where you can submit questions to us, and that will be at ontrack@altium.com. I'll put that in the show notes so you don't have to write that down while you're driving or working out right now. And so you can submit questions to Ben and I directly through that email, and or go to the lounge and just ask questions, and there'll be people to engage with you there, but then we'll also pluck juicy topics out of there to do once a month or so. So
yeah,
we're super excited. Yeah. We were late for recording because we already just started doing the Ask Me Anything on our own. So okay, so today we're going to jump right in.
Mm-hmm.
And you had a fascinating question. So the question that stuck out to Ben from the lounge was, is the Altium Vault worthwhile with a company with just two EEs?
That's a really excellent question to ask, because it's a simple question with a very deep answer, and to answer it properly would require maybe more questions to be asked. Now, just to preface this, the question on the, as it reads on the forum, is using the word Altium Vault, which is a product. Vault as a brand name has been retired officially, and in its place we have Altium Nexus, and soon to come 365, which we've demonstrated at our Altium Live user conferences in San Diego and Munich. And lots of people are very interested in that because they see that this other side of engineering a PCB-based product is making sure you can actually build it. And getting to production involves a lot of things like supply chain, making sure your data is correct, and so on. So this question, is it worthwhile having Altium Vault for a company with only two electrical engineers, is really, I think, another way of putting it, and especially for the purposes of the OnTrack podcast, it's really asking, is it worth having a formal data management system for your electronics design if you're only a small business or a one-man show? Or I would even extend this and say, is it worthwhile doing formal data management practices if you're an individual design contract engineer or contract PCB designer? And I would say the short answer is absolutely. Definitely it is. But the reasons why may be different for different people. So I think we should dive down a little deeper and find out what are the elements that make that so.
Okay. Which actually your answer would surprise me, because I would think you would just, again, not being a designer, you would just use version control. Like, why wouldn't people, if they were just a single contractor doing, you know, why wouldn't they just use a version control system rather than, you know, it takes a lot of energy and discipline, I imagine, to put together a really good system.
Well, you actually just really hit on something there by saying energy and discipline. I'm going to come back around to that, energy and discipline. That's a perfect way to describe something. So you mentioned version control systems. So for those of you out there, I've looked at the statistics and the analytics from our webinars and from the analytics engine that was for a time. It isn't there right now, but we did have an analytics engine within Altium Designer that would report back to us, you know, not just crash reports or issues with the software so we could gather statistics, but also different areas within our CAD program that would show where what features people are using and what they're not knowing about. Yep. And one of those is version control systems. As many people do know, we have had for some time support for Subversion, and in more recent times we're supporting, you know, with AD18 introduced it sort of in a quiet way, support for Git. And these are version control systems. Mm-hmm. And what a version control system does for the 80% of Altium users who do not use version control, coming back.
80%?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Coming back to the statistics and analytics I've personally looked at, more than 80% of designers do not use a formal even version control system. So let's explain even what that is at the baseline level. A version control system allows you to have a central location where your data is stored. And as you work on that data and you save files, you make edits during the day, you get to the end of the day, you're constantly saving your schematic if you're an engineer or a PCB design. And at some point, you say, I need to commit this to the system. So that goes into version control as a revision. And you carry on like this through the entire design process. And what it does for you is a few things, but it allows you to go back to any point in time if you run into problem. If you have a crash on your computer or suffer some kind of data loss event, the version control server is effectively like a versioned backup that lets you go back to a specific point in time and restore that, at least that point in time, And you may say, well, why not just use a backup system? You could, but it doesn't give you associativity between that moment in time and what you were doing and what your engineering intent was. Whereas a version control system does give you that. The other thing a version control system allows you to do is compare changes. So the point of that is if you're in a team-based environment, or even if you're a team of one, you can look at the differences of what you did yourself. You can compare, this is my current version, and I want to go back in time to what I was doing. So today's Monday afternoon, and I've made some design decision to do something, and I'm looking at my schematic or my PCB, and I'm scratching my head thinking, now what was I thinking on Friday when I did that?
Right.
And you can go back to Friday and compare now, Monday to Friday, and see the differences. And that works across teams with multiple people as well. So you can compare different revisions from different contributors and mm-hmm. see what's changing.
Yep.
And have some sort of traceability or trackability in that, and be able to...
In context.
Yes. And to be able to see exactly what's going on. Even if you're on your own, that is extremely helpful. But version control system is not a full formal data management system. It doesn't give you things like lifecycle management. It doesn't give you links to supply chain. And in terms of managing components, a lot of people like to manage their component libraries with SVN, for example. Mm-hmm. It gives you that versioning of the symbols and the footprints, but not of the actual parameters or supply chain data. So it's like driving a car on the freeway at high speed and feeling safe because you know how to drive and you trust yourself as a driver, and you're in a car that's presumably roadworthy. So you're surrounded by metal.
Right.
But if you think about it objectively, there's any number of things that could go wrong and cause an accident and severe damage to you and other people. If there's black ice on the road outside of your control, things may be outside of your control, drunk drivers around you, or if you're tired and just have a momentary lapse of attention while you're driving. We all know a lot of people have accidents when they're drowsy. The same thing happens when you're designing. And I'll just share one quick story with version control, feeling like it's safe when it doesn't give you complete coverage, if we have time for that.
Okay.
I remember when I was managing technical support several years ago, I had a customer who I won't mention, but they had this situation where they were using version control, and they were generally speaking a very high quality person, very like excellent design engineer, excellent PCB designer, mm-hmm. knew what they were doing, very competent, totally trustworthy, mm-hmm. but had a deadline. And that deadline caused them to work nights, weekends, and late into the night to get this board finished.
Right.
And
not your best working brain.
Right. So the board was finished and sent to production, and it came back with the first $20,000 worth of stock scrap because an internal plane layer had become somehow... No one knows how to this day, but an internal plane split for their power supply had become disconnected from the component leads and vias on that plane. It had lost its net assignment. It had lost its net name, and instead of being 3V3 or whatever it was now no net. So it the copper was there, but it wasn't connected. And the question was, how did this get out without failing the design rule check?
Right.
And the whole design was in version control. So version control enabled us to actually check out the exact revision of the entire project documents mm-hmm. from the time of release.
Right.
And there was a design rule check report But the design rule check report file was dated a month earlier.
Oh.
And so what had happened was the designer had this DRC report that said everything was clear, but being 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning and very tired didn't, it's just like it could happen to
anyone
of us. And
right.
I've made very similar mistakes
right.
myself. But unfortunately, this time it actually cost the designer money out of his own pocket, and it was very painful. But the upshot of all that is you can have a version control system, and it's not going to, like, you as a designer still have to have some discipline to know how to use it right and to make sure you're still doing your design rule checking and things.
So in the context of your story, how would data management protect that designer from that situation?
Now, that is a beautiful question.
Thank you.
Because this is where a true data management system differentiates itself
okay.
from just using version control. The data management system, one of the functions, one of the many functions of a formal data management system would be you don't get to generate new Gerber files unless you've done a DRC. It creates a process
okay.
where for something to happen, like generating outputs for manufacturing,
mm-hmm.
all the other ducks have to be lined up in a row
okay.
perfectly.
I see.
And that can be annoying to designers.
Like, super annoying.
Like, for example, if I'm committing a project release to data management system, in our case it may be Vault or Altium 365 mm-hmm. workspace or whatever
right.
whatever we're going to call it, okay, if I'm releasing a project, it won't release unless the status of all of my files is they are saved and they are committed to version control and are the latest revision.
So I think you mentioned this before. This reminds me of a pre-flight check. Like, you can't move ahead until
yes.
you've gone through, so it really gives you forced accountability at every step.
Right, right.
So, all right.
And,
so,
and this comes back to that question from the forum, is it worth having formal data management for only
mm-hmm.
a small team? And
yeah.
the scenario I was relaying was an actual user, an actual designer who I haven't met in person, but I'd spoken to on the phone several times, a real person who was a contractor, and having formal data management, at least on the project side, would have saved his bacon and
right.
saved $20,000 out of his own pocket in that scenario.
Oh, man, and once it's populated, right? Because that's parts
mm-hmm.
cost.
That was
or that
was
the cost. Just the bare board.
That was the cost of the initial run of boards fully assembled.
Ouch.
And yeah, I really felt pain.
Right.
For the designer and. But this goes down to every level, all the way down. You know, a lot of people are using version control for their designs, but not for their libraries. They're still managing. Again, I look at the statistics of our customers.
Mm-hmm.
80%, more than 80% of them are not using any kind of version control, and especially for libraries, they're using integrated libraries, which are good, it works, and they're using discrete schematic and PCB component libraries for designing from.
Mm-hmm.
And that's cool, but the other thing, version control systems, at least, and better yet, data management systems, is give you accountability not just in the process, but accountability in the way you organize and store your data so that you can have a much more efficient time finding the parts you need when you need them.
Which, again, back to my original point, it, what is that saying carpenters have? Measure twice, cut once.
Yeah.
You know, it's that kind of like, I would imagine if I were a designer, like I would want to just run ahead sometimes with deadlines mm-hmm. and all of that rather than take the time up front to invest into making sure that was in place. So
if you're not employing a good process for, and it could just be for one person, for yourself even, or for a team of people,
mm-hmm.
Sort of bringing this back to part libraries, one of the things I like to say about a footprint or a library is it's the oldest form of design reuse in our industry. The first or the most basic form of design reuse is, because if you think about a component footprint on a circuit board, it's a collection of pads at fixed sizes and spacings.
Right.
That's a land pattern.
Right.
And those are standardized. And in the very first prototype CAD software, each pad would have been an individual item that would have to be placed onto a grid. And then from that, you create, like, let's reuse all of these together. And now that's called a footprint.
Right.
And it's still done to this day that way. You create footprints right. by placing things, or now we have wizards to speed up and automate that process. But where am I going with this? In the standard, we're reusing the same kind of package type over and over again, so
right.
we can make one footprint in a library
right.
and make it useful for lots of different components.
Of course.
And so a library is the most basic form of design reuse. But you can't trust any kind of design reuse if it's not done to a standard and to a particular process.
Right.
So you have the library, but then you have another layer of protection and control over that that helps you reuse things more easily and effectively is version control. And one more layer on top of that again is the full data management system, which incorporates, like, version control may only give you versioning and comparisons for just the graphical stuff, the symbol and the footprint. With a formal data management system like Vault or Nexus 365 Workspace, you're going to get versioning for the graphics, but also for every aspect of the component and its life cycle. So that's another whole level again.
Yeah, the life cycle.
And life cycles.
Right, which is, as we know, especially critical now with all the part shortages. I was just thinking about, we were chatting earlier, I told you that I had 5 minutes as an interior designer, and I had a teacher, and we were handing hand draft, which is a painstaking process, and I found myself wanting to just rush ahead and get the work done, right? And there was door swings and window openings and different things that we were doing. And it was very painstaking. And I found myself, like, just wanting to create the product. And she used to tease me. She said, "Dude, you know, hippie drafting, like, stop it."
I love that.
But then when you think about it, if I had given that to a builder and the door swing was off, you know what I'm saying? Like, how much trouble.
Yeah.
And I kind of,
well, then it's how that's a really good point. Like, so just to make sure I understand what you're saying correctly, you can do a rough hand drawing of where things should be.
Right.
And most people could look at that and understand the vision you have for that.
Yes.
For that room at
yes.
the house.
Right.
And that's cool.
But if it's not to perfect scale.
But then you're forcing, so then what would happen? The builder would take that hand drawing, that sketch.
And make all and kinds
redo,
of assumptions.
Yeah. Yes.
Yes.
Right.
Assumptions.
Make assumptions, redraw some of it to be to spec first, maybe. I don't know.
Call or me just, six times, like.
Yeah. Want to clarify things. Yeah. The whole project, what happens then?
Yeah. It slows down or gets made wrong or.
So this has happened also, and most people would be familiar with this in the PCB industry. This kind of thing goes on a lot.
Yeah, I'm telling you, from a manufacturing standpoint, it happens all the time. It's like, oh, here's my board, build it for me, and here's a README file and some Gerbers. Have a nice day. And then it's like, use FR4 or use
what layer whatever. Are the orders in?
Yeah.
I mean, what order?
Up.
What, sorry,
yes.
What order are the layers? See,
yeah.
I even mixed up
what
my sentence.
What layers are the orders in? Yeah. yeah, all of that. And so these phone calls go back and forth, because there's not proper documentation, Or people assume, oh, you didn't say the brand of laminate. I know what you mean. I'll just use this other one. This happens.
And then your impedances all the are
time.
Off.
Yes. And it's like, what happened? Well, we used X brand instead of Y brand. Because there weren't notes that said, you know, use this, no exceptions. Or
you know,
you can put or equivalent in if it's a simple, but when you get into high performance materials, they're critical. And so there's all these, it's hippie board making, I'm telling you. It's like everybody's innocent here. It's just the state of the speed at which we move. And so, you know, I used to tell designers, in fact, I remember writing a blog once, and I used to tell people, talk to your board fabricator before you have everything laid out and cast in stone, because we can make recommendations early. And so I wrote this blog about that, and I said, slow down to hurry up.
Yeah.
Which
that's
is what
exactly what this whole thing is about.
Yes. So that's what
it's
I hear you saying.
It's a tortoise and hare. Like you spend time up front creating a system for yourself that gives you rails to run on.
Right.
Now, once you've built the railroad, the trains go, like anyone who's been to Europe knows, once you've built a good railroad, you can get places very fast, very cheaply.
Right.
Because the train goes real fast. And a good data management system with good data management practices, you have to think about things up front to set it up. But once you've set up the system, you're on rails and you can scream through projects.
Yeah.
And have a much higher, like nothing's ever 100% absolutely certain about this world except death and taxes. We know that, right? But you can get to 98% and have a much easier time getting things to production, and and that's a really good example of the from the building and interior decorating industry. But it's the same thing.
It is.
People spec boards all the time that are under-specced, and we think, well, it's a design documentation problem. Well, partly, yes, you need to provide the full set of specifications, and even IPC have recently updated or come out with good standards in the 2000 series for this, for classifying electronic versus hard copy versus files, data transfer.
Right.
Like there's now three classes of data set you can send to manufacturing, and they're graded based on how complete they are. And
I need to see this.
And
this documentation thing.
Right, so
is big deal.
That's needed in the industry to solve at least the documentation side of it.
Mm-hmm.
But most of you would agree that it's a case of you need to have really detailed standards-based fabrication and assembly drawings. Well, yeah, you do. Some of us would argue that theoretically, all the design intent can be captured in your electronic files.
Right.
And if we have a complete enough file standard, we could use that. And drawings may not be needed, except that there are still people at the manufacturing plants. Well, they still, to provide you an accurate quote for your job.
For sure.
They still want to be able to print things out and look at them that way.
Yes, of
course. At least do that in some electronic form.
Yes.
Which, you know, we're working on that, right? Lee Gorn and his team are doing a great job sort of building that out. But but you could say it's a documentation problem, but I say it's a data management problem, because you shouldn't be able to, again, you shouldn't be able to release a product. You can generate files for making your prototypes and your first articles maybe, and you're willing to work around those issues of testing in your own lab. But if you're going to produce something, a good data management system won't let you send anything out that's incomplete. That's what a good data management system will do. If you release a design, all your parts have good life cycles. If you release a part, every pin on the symbol is correctly numbered and assigned to its correct pad on the footprint side, right?
And you oriented don't release, the right way and yeah. so on and so forth, right?
And it gives you reuse on rails, let's say.
Right.
Because I now have a vault-based or a data management-based library of graphics. So I've got symbols, which all follow standard IEEE 315 symbols. I've got a bunch of footprints, which are all IPC 7351 or, you know, JEDEC, with JEDEC standard packages and good 3D models. That's another whole podcast. How to and
next
where
time.
To and all
yeah.
that. And I can very rapidly reuse the graphics without having to regenerate them each and every time, because most of them, more than 80% of the CAD data in a library is standards based. And therefore, apart from a few exceptions with different component heights and strange packaging for connectors and things like that, generally speaking, you have a system where you can reuse most of what's in there for the graphics and save a lot of time. And then it's just a matter of linking in the supply chain and other metadata of the component, like who its manufacturer, part number, what its temperature ranges are, tolerances, all that kind of stuff.
Right.
So, but then with all of that, you have a life cycle. So if this part becomes no longer available, or there's some reason why you're not allowed to use it, you mark it as such in the system. And then the whole team, even if it's a team of one, doesn't accidentally put this part that you shouldn't be using into a new design.
Right. And like you said, we're all human. We're all apt to do yeah. it, especially when we're working overtime and we're sleep deprived. Or
and every engineer and PCB designer out there I know from time to time works through the night.
Yep.
To get something done.
I just flew to Munich with one guy, and he's working on projects on the plane. And
yep.
Because he can't sleep on a plane, even though it was an international flight.
Ah, the old "Does the CAD work on a plane?"
Yeah,
argument.
Yes. Yeah.
Another topic.
That's another. We have so many. Okay, well, thank you. And this has been really fascinating, because actually I didn't know there were certain parts of data management that it really keeps you accountable. And I can see, like, the, you know, slow down to hurry up. It makes perfect yeah. sense to me. But, you know, from initially I would think, you're one guy, you're, you know, you can do hippie drafting. No,
you can, but just be prepared to waste time and back and forth have problems.
Nobody has time to waste time. Okay, on the lighter side, another person put kind of a quirky, funny thing up on the forum, which made me laugh. How do you pronounce via?
Oh,
Via Via.
Oh.
Which side do you fall on, Ben Jordan?
I'm a Via guy.
I'm a Via guy, too. Via? I keep thinking Via con Dios. Like, who says Via?
I think
do you know
it depends.
Anyone that says Via?
I think it depends where you come from.
Yeah, I think it's an international thing.
I think I've heard more English friends use the word Via.
Oh.
Which I would expect from Australia, too. But Australia's a bit mixed in our
right.
vernacular use of that. If I was talking, if I was back in Sydney, where I grew up,
right.
and talking about roads,
yes,
you'd say you go via that route.
I see.
But then you switch gears, you're talking to a fellow designer about PCBs, they'd say via. It's really weird. It's messed up.
So, so via, like, what is the root of this word, via? I mean, we know what it means. Is it, we need to do some research.
Well,
you can comment
yeah.
and tell us, is it a
Where's
Latin
it
word? Is it a Spanish word, right? Because it's in Spanish. We live here in California.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Everything is, word via around here. And in Spanish, that vowel, that I can, and A can only be said one way.
Ooh,
right?
Okay.
Uh-huh.
How is it in Italy? with the viaduct. See, again, I say via when it's viaduct.
See?
But is it viaduct or viaduct? I could be wrong. I have no clue. We need you.
I have no clue. Okay, so you guys
jump
have
on
to
that
like
and give us the answer.
Yeah, see, we should have Googled this ahead of time, act like we knew. But it was a funny question. So, speaking of vias, they're vias to me. I'm sorry. Being in the board industry for this many years, they've always been vias to me. So, a friend of the podcast, his name is Jesus, by the way. Jesus, thank you so much for your kind comments about the podcast. And I had asked him, well, two funny things first, but I have to tell you. So this guy, Jesus, sends a thing just saying that he loves the podcast and he learned a lot from John Watson and the...
Oh, yeah.
Because we were talking
brilliant.
About data management.
Absolutely brilliant.
And so he said he learned a lot from it. Thanks for making the podcast, so on and so forth. So I said, hey, thank you so much. What would you like to learn more about? Because we're always looking for designers to tell us what they want to learn about. And so he mentioned vias. So he's like, via protection. Should they be Ooh. Covered, uncovered, filled, unfilled, conductive, non-conductive, right? I mean, there's a whole rat's nest
oh,
in
yeah.
there, and planarized, non-planarized.
Rat's nest, like that, sorry.
That was, no pun intended. Oh my gosh. Stepped right into that. That's sad. So we're going to do a podcast on that. And I
Ooh,
think
yeah,
I know just the guy.
That is a great topic.
Who is a front end engineer at a really fabulous board shop who will give us all the ins and outs. And I've been around vias and via filling and all of that in the board industry. And it really is. There can be a lot to it. And it's gotten so much better.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't do it right, it could be a disaster. So we will. So coming soon, we'll be looking forward to.
Oh, I will
to
be watching that one.
Yes,
very keenly.
And by
I'm
then
really
we will
interested.
Know whether it's a via. And
okay.
So we'll jump on that. So Ben, thank you so much.
Oh,
of course,
it's a pleasure.
I say this to you all the time, but every time I hang out with Ben Jordan, I learn something. So this is good.
You're so kind. I learn a lot from you too.
See?
Yes.
Yeah, and if he needs to know something about boars, right?
Yep.
We learn from each other, so
yep.
It's a good thing. So thank you again for tuning in, enjoying the On Track podcast. Remember to hop on the Altium Live forum, send some questions, and are also send us your questions through email, via email, at OnTrack.
At Altium.com.
At Altium.com.
Yeah, OnTrack@Altium.com.
Okay.
Cool.
Thanks, guys. See you next time. And remember
to always stay on track.
I like that one.